Well, hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show, streaming live from California on BBS Radio and also on the new Podopolo podcasting platform. I am delighted today to be joined by a great friend of mine, and I don't want to pronounce your last name wrong, Patricia. So just tell me your first and last name so I get the pronunciation correct.
Patricia Gigich.
I would have got it wrong.
It's everybody does.
So welcome to the show today. And a little bit of background, if we've not met yet so far, this show is designed to help showcase incredible women. Typically, they have risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph and are now out in the world doing amazing things that are worth celebrating. And typically, they have some sort of underlying mission-inspired business or passion or a cause, and it's impacting not just their life, but a bigger impact, making a footprint in humanity. So I'm delighted today to be joined by my friend Patricia, and she is an incredible individual. So let's do her bio, and then I will share a little bit more about why I'm doing this work. So Patricia is a award-winning international contemporary artist and author, and a visionary. She is represented by the 13th Street Gallery in St. Catharines, Artwork Fine Art in Toronto, Ontario. So you're in Toronto and I'm in Calgary, Alberta, and also in with FASEC International in France, Paul Fisher Gallery in Florida, and the Gallery of the Bay in Hamilton, Ontario. So Patricia does lots of beautiful exhibits, and she's winning awards for this. So she won in 2018 the gold medal in photography at the SNBA at the Carrousel du Louvre in Paris, France. The Art Tour International magazine named Patricia Artist of the Year in 2020. She's also a recipient of the 2017 Excellence in Arts for the Courage and Commitment to Human Rights, Dignity and Freedom by the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, Silver Medal in Photography in 2021, and the recipient of the Apollo and Daphne International Award, Biennale of Baroque. I may be pronouncing some of these things wrong because this is to do with Italia in Art, Nel Mondo Associano Culturale. So there are a lot more awards that I will mention and sort of intersperse them throughout this conversation because I know Patricia as a woman of inspiration. We're both a Woman of Inspiration Award recipients and alumni, excuse me, and was delighted to get connected with her. And through Patricia, have met so many other incredible women in particular. I work with women to help them flourish in business, to teach them how to do that, particularly by having more confident conversations. That's my area of expertise. I am a speaker, an author, best-selling author of the book Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. And through the coaching and mentoring that I do with women professionals, women entrepreneurs, and those who are passionate about building out a social enterprise and a mission-inspired business, I help those women who don't have a clear vision, they don't yet know how to articulate their business idea, how to monetize it, and how to bring it to market. And I'm passionate about that because my mom in England was the one who was my first mentor, taught me how not to speak up, how to be very quiet, and I just swore I was never ever going to be like her. And there's so many amazing stories that we can celebrate about women now that I love to bring women to the stage. So welcome, Patricia.
Thank you. I'm super happy to be here with you. Yes.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about how your life was growing up, and also how this passion for art developed.
I had a really wonderful childhood. So my parents were both basically European backgrounds and very driven to make sure that we as children, I have a sister, would find our passion in life, be successful. But my dad was really a little bit eccentric, and he wanted us to know whatever we could about the world. So when we were very young, we would have to sit in the dining room, and he had Encyclopedia Britannica, and we would start in one book and he would read us, and then he would question us, and then, you know, we would talk about it. So I had this strong passion and interest in the uniqueness of what other people had done in historically. So there was always an element of, you know, music in our house. My dad just absolutely loved the bagpipes. He was basically Polish, but he called himself Joe McSemenik because he wanted to, you know, embrace the other cultures. And one of the things that I loved a lot was that when he introduced us to certain, you know, different aspects of culture, he didn't stop at anything other than you have to know a little bit about every country. So one of the recording artists that he used to play over and over was Miriam Makeba, and she would sing in Swahili. And when I was in grade 7, I decided that I would memorize the entire album. And when my father, his birthday was in April, and on his birthday, I did a performance where I sang all of Miriam Makeba's songs on this particular album, which became, you know, just a shock for him, like that I could even do it. Shock for me, because, of course, when you're singing in Swahili, and Mary McKeba had, you know, like the various things that they could do with their tongues, the click songs, and I tried to perfect that. So I know I had a little bit of an unusual startup, but my mom was also extremely talented, and I think we were just nurtured to see life from a perspective of, you know, nature and embracing with open eyes. You know, my father, they came from extremely extreme poverty. They truly did. And my dad appreciated, I think, every single second of his life. So from the very beginning, we were given an opportunity to be mindful, to understand mindfulness, and to really appreciate what we were doing in the moment. So that I had I grew up with such a respect for my elders, a respect for the integrity around what we had, the culture, and really understood that I should be grateful for the things that I have. And I did. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, for me right now, servitude is a great part and always has been in my life.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that as you're describing that journey, it's taking me back to how I actually ended up in Canada, which was working for a British educational company. And one of the products that they had was actually the Caxton's encyclopedias.
Okay. And
yeah. So that was part of my very early sales career, actually. And one of the reasons I ended up in Canada when they needed to expand the company, go global, and interviewing and hiring and training sales reps was part of the role that got me from England to Canada when I was 23. So it's something that warms my heart. And I'm so glad to see that there were parents who didn't just leave those books with such valuable content gathering dust on the shelf, that they actually integrated it and were very purposeful in their education for you. I had seen him in your bio that you were able to sing in Swahili, and I wondered when that was going to come through in your story. What a lovely way to grow up, and certainly the appreciation for everything. I think, you know, your parents and my parents possibly went through some of the same scarcity mindset when the, you know, World War II was on. And, you know, my mum used to save every little piece of foil and use it so many times over and over and over that it was falling apart before she would open up a new piece. And that was...
I still do.
You still do? Yeah.
I was taught, yeah, we never... Foil paper probably has sat there for 5 years, and if I can still use it, I do.
Well, nowadays we have many Canadian cities. Toronto probably does, like Calgary, where we do have, you know, the recycling and composting going on. So I feel better about, you know, I reuse several times too, but I do feel better when I actually have to, you know, throw it in the garbage. it's no more use.
Yes.
So you were also expanded as well with your artwork. So you studied under master artist Dragan Dragic. Am I pronouncing that right?
So he is Serbian. However, his name, because he has been in France his entire life, his name is Dragic.
Dragic. Okay.
So which means I'm Gajic.
Okay. So how did the art interest foster?
Well, the passion again for seeing the world through different lens, between photography and then painting, was always there. And I initially started to do watercolors, and then my husband encouraged me to actually really paint. I was always drawing, that was forever. But when I tackled painting, I realized I was painting like Jackson Pollock, and I was just so, aggressive. And at the same time, it was very logical. And I started to dig into art courses, and I looked into the, finding a mentor. So I was really fortunate. In a couple of years, I found Tony Urquhart, who was part of the Group of Seven in Canada. He introduced me to a few other artists that I was able to study. But my big moment came when we had taken this trip to France, and when I was going to pick up the keys for the place that we were staying at, which was called La Bigoud de Mazenc, I went to the gentleman's home, and he had a gallery of art, and all three floors were just wall to wall. And he said, I know you're an artist. Would you like to see my collection? And I said, absolutely. So as we were going through all of the pieces, we get up to the third floor, and I'm now completely overwhelmed. I mean, there's amazing work. And I see this painting of a white horse, and it was somewhat abstract, which I thought that was interesting. But there was just something magnetic about the color, the construction, everything about the painting. And I looked at the name, and it said Dragic. So I said, oh, he's a Serbian, Dragic. And he goes, no, he's very French. It's Dragic. And he lives about 3 hours away from where you're going to be staying. And I said, I want to meet him. Now, whatever possessed me in that moment to say that, it's only, I think that's the karma, the synchronicity. So he said, well, he's quite eccentric and I doubt he'll see you. But I said, well, when I get there, I will make an attempt. And we contacted him three times. He said, no. And I said, I didn't come all the way here now to know that I'm not going to meet this man. So finally, we were able to get him to agree to a Wednesday afternoon, a 2-hour meeting, and we had to drive up to Mont Ventoux. And as we were heading up, there's a fork in the road, and you can go that way or that way. One way is going to get you there in about 40 minutes. The other way is going to get you there 2.5 hours later. And we took the wrong direction. So we were very late. And when we got there, he was sitting on this big rock in Savoyon in this 5th century little village. And it was just breathtaking. And he was very kind, took us upstairs. And then I really lost my mind, because I saw that he was basically friends with Picasso, had exhibited with Picasso, that he was in the top 10 percentile of the masters of artists, that he knew Christo. He had exhibition after exhibition in Paris, with, in Grenoble, at all the wonderful galleries in Avignon. So he was really an icon. Mm-hmm. And he owed me nothing. It was basically, I was an interrupter in his life. And yet, as we were winding up our meeting, he doesn't speak English, only French and Serbian. And he said, to my husband, he goes, what does she want in life? Does she want money? Does she want fame? What does she want? And, he said, no, she just loves painting. And he said, I don't teach people, but I will invite her for 1 week. And this was in 1999. And she has to learn how to speak French, and or we can't communicate. So get her to do what she needs to do, and then call me and we will arrange it. So that happened. And then I arrived, and I took 37 or 38 hours of tutored French. And I had all of the books, Le Baron, all the books I could get my hands on. And when we arrived, I went into a complete total meltdown shock. I was brought to the zero. As much as he really liked my work and he saw, he said, you know nothing. And I had to realize that to get to where he was, which I didn't think would ever happen in my lifetime, I would have to work. But I loved it so much. And I had this incredible opportunity just to work with this master. And I realized he truly was a genius. And I said, okay. So I stripped my brain completely, got rid of my ego, because you can't have an ego when you're with a man who has a huge ego.
Exactly.
And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And then we finished our first week and he invited me back and back and back. So from 1999 until 2021, I've gone back many, 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 many times, sometimes just for a weekend to go and see him at an exhibition opening. And then he invited me in 2007 or 8 to have a show with him. And so we had a joint exhibition, and that was, you know, for me, that was just the creme de la creme to have my name on the same card with his. And it has just been, I mean, I could talk about it for hours and hours and hours, but you know, the passion, if it's already inside of you and you're really, really lucky to get someone to support you, to see something in you, but you really do have to strip away what you think you know, because if you can arrive at a place where someone already does know and you can recognize that, then you can recognize more things inside of you. And yeah, that I think was what he basically appreciated in me, that I was willing to mm-hmm. work so hard. And now we are just like totally best friends, have been for many years. Yeah. And yeah, so that's the passion and the glory of art.
It's a very powerful statement. I can't remember whether it was T. Harv Eker or Jack Canfield, one of the great transformational trainers in the world, who basically said, you know, one of the several most dangerous words in the English language are, I know that. So it's only three words, I know that. And when you go into any situation with that mindset, then it's, you know, it's, you'll never learn because you're not open to it. So great points. And certainly I would suspect that some of those elements were also key contributors to you authoring your award-winning nonfiction book, Karmic Alibi. Tell me a little bit about that too. How did that come about?
Karmic Alibi became a challenge for me based on the fact that I had joined a mastermind in Los Angeles, Craig Doeswalt, Rockstar Marketing. And he was teaching people how to write a book in 30 days. And again, this is going back a decade. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my goodness, like it's something I've always wanted to do. I wrote poetry and I have a bazillion stories. And then I said, I can do this. And I started to put the book together and I really wasn't 100% sure what stories I wanted to share. I do have, and I have had a lot of tragedy in my life. And yet I felt as if I stood outside of the suffering, and I accepted it as a vehicle for me to change myself and to be able to thrive. But I also realized that I was helping a lot of people by simply having that energetic value. And when I started to write Karmic Alibi and I was telling some of the stories, and I didn't write it in the first person, the word I is not in the book at all, I did create a gentleman or a wisdom auditor who gives the lesson after or during what event took place for me. And then he, you know, evolves my lesson into that karmic wisdom. So the book was called Karmic Alibi, Gaining Expedient Wisdom by Leaving Your Excuses Behind. And I love the fact that I want to do a rewrite of the book, because I think at the time when you're expressing a really deep amount of your own vulnerability, you become aware that as other people are going to read it, you're going to be judged. And yet then I thought, wow, I don't really want to be judged on grammatical, or, you know, maybe I could have said things better. I know you love words, and when I have conversations with you, Yvonne, I'm often thinking, gosh, I hope I don't say it the wrong way or I use the right word, because you're just a genius at understanding the meaning behind so many words. But I've lived with my, efforts, and they are, I have to accept, they are at the time what I had written. And, they've created a version of me that I'm happy with. So moving forward, I thought, well, karma is a really big part of what I feel, what I have learned. And so I attempted to write a second book called Karma and Cash. And it was created to share a fictional story about a group of people. And all of their names are basically the names of money. And Cash is actually a person. And when I finished writing it, I wanted to expand upon it. So I have taken the book off the shelf, and I'm going to do a rewrite of that book as well. So it will involve more of, the blessings, I guess, that we have to share.
Yeah. It's interesting how we evolve as leaders. So one of the coaching programs that I'm certified to teach is actually intelligence operating system, bank intelligence operating system coaching. And one of the elements in that is looking at spiritual intelligence and the four levels of leadership. And as you've already surmised, money is only the first level. There are three more levels on top of that. And so it's interesting to share some of that insight as we go through that course, and people's awareness is really opening up, I feel, partly because of what's happening with COVID, that everybody got thrown into uncertainty. And even though there's a few sayings out there early on, I saw people saying, well, we're all in the same boat. Well, yes, we are all in the same situation, that we're all in uncertainty, and yet how each person handles it is going to be very different based on the resources that they have, their resilience level, their ability to bounce back, their ability to deal with uncertainty. And, I learned early on in my son's life about uncertainty, because when he was a year old, he started having seizures. And by that time, we'd already realized that he had been diagnosed as having some developmental delays, and he was going to be a special needs, really interesting character. And you just can't describe to another mother how it feels watching, your 1-year-old baby on the table convulsing and having a grand mal seizure. I mean, everything else goes out the window. So, how we deal with uncertainty makes a difference. And certainly having your servant heart makes a huge difference as well, because it's not about us. It's not about only making money. Yes, we need to be making a living to be able to be contributing. And yet the more that we are able to contribute, the more comes back to us, because energy of reciprocity, full circle. And as long as we're giving from a place of overflow, then we'll all be doing great work. So, the distinction obviously between not-for-profit and for a mission inspired business is that you do have the ability to still use your business brain to create an amazing organization. And yet at the center of it is this mission inspired element, which is building and continuing to build on what's already there as a solid foundation. So I know that you've also stepped into doing a lot more. So when I look at your resume, you have also been, over the last little while, CFO for the Hamilton Vein Clinic. You're a certified meditation specialist facilitator, certification in applied mindfulness and transformational mindfulness, and mindfulness without borders from Factor Intuish, Faculty of Social Work, a member of the International Women's Forum Toronto chapter, a Reiki master, level 3 Feng Shui consultant, mentor for the Federal Business Development Bank. And no wonder in 2013 that you were knighted as a dame at the International Order of St. George, Grand Prior of Canada in the Niagara Commandery. A lot of the work that you're doing now is so connected. So tell me a little bit about Help Heal Humanity, because you're an officer for that, chief visionary officer for that not-for-profit, correct?
Yes, yes. You know, again, synchronicity walks through your door and you have to make a decision. What do you do with it? So I'll just take you a step backwards.
Okay.
So back in 2000, I've always been in a community mind. I sat on the board of Junior Achievement for almost 8 years in various capacities, teaching a company program, project business, doing a lot of fundraising. I was involved with the Bach Elgar Choral Society, the Jerovinsky Cancer Center, all of these things in our community. And I always felt this incredible love relationship with having collective consciousness and not separating myself from, you know, the color or distinction that other people would make. It never ever was part of who I am. And it's probably because of the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. My meeting of, you know, the young Kilbergers, Mark and Craig Kilberger, almost 20 years ago. And I was involved as an advisor to their board. And, you know, as they progressed and did Me to We and all of these other things, I was able to support building a school in the Ola Green in the Masamari in South Africa. I did a lot of different project with that. And then in 2006, I had a really crazy thing happen. A friend of mine was publishing her book on Markawasti, the stone forest of Peru. She went to Thailand to work out a deal with a publisher. And when she was there, I had said to her, you know, you need to go down to Cambodia and visit Angkor Wat, because she was an extremely, extremely spiritual person. And I said, you know, it is such a sacred space. You need to be there. So she did that, went down just for 3 days, and she walked kind of off the beaten path. And when she got to the South Pagoda area of Angkor, there was a monk sitting there on a cement pad with, you know, four sticks basically standing up, and also just these war-torn buildings. And so she said to the monk, "Do you speak English?" He said, "Of course." And she said, "What are you doing with this cement pad here? It's got a sign that says School for Poor Children and Orphanage." And he said, "Well, Master Kawan has been the gatekeeper of Angkor Wat. This is third or fourth or fifth generation. And the government of Cambodia, because of the past regime, the Pol Pot, Khmer Rouge, have said they want to bring UNESCO in and to create a better looking environment. And they're going to tear down this South Pagoda that has an incredible historical value. Master Kawan believes that if he built a library, that they won't tear him down and he'll be able to still look after these children that are running around in the jungle there." And she said to him, "What do you need?" And he said, "Like, we need like $5,000 to get this thing done." So right there on the spot, she called me and she said, "This project has your name all over it, and you need to send me $5,000 right now." I'm like, "Okay, first of all, are you okay, Kathy?" I think that transmission was so, so powerful that I never even hesitated. I just simply said yes. And of course, following that, I was able to go to Cambodia the following year in 2007 and saw the incredible library that had been built. So what happened was that during the time of the Khmer Rouge, all the monks and the nuns, they had to make a decision, because Pol Pot was burning the books. He was burning and murdering. I mean, the genocide, Yvonne, you know the history, was horrific. So to save the Cambodian folklore and the Buddhist teachings, they buried the reeds, which they wrote on, into the stupas and underneath the ground, whereby they were able to save all of the teachings. They were buried for over 25 years. And now Master Kawan felt that if he could bring them up from underneath the ground and rewrite them, put them into the library, they would be able to restore and have a site that the government would be allowing them to continue and maintain it.
Right.
So, of course, when we got there, we saw what had transpired, and it was just completely breathtaking and very overwhelming. But we also saw the needs, and we saw there was, you know, really no strong pillars to continue this. There were no bathrooms. There were no showers. They were living on these little huts with blankets, and all the small children whose parents had died either from AIDS or from landmines were just literally living, coping. So I got back, we got back from Cambodia, and my heart was just like, I need to do more. Ah, yeah. So we did. And we spent from 2007 right through until today working on, we had a school for the monks built. Right now, Master Kawan, who basically would have just gone to Phnom Penh and been put into a monastery, basically, and it would have just lost his entire privilege of being the gatekeeper. He actually now is considered to be one of the head, most senior, most important monks in Cambodia. Mm. And so the you never know the direction when you say, you know, is this the moment for me to say yes? So the value of that whole story, of course, is, you know, certainly $5,000 is a lot of money. And yet when you, it's like Russian roulette. Do you risk it? And did I want a benefit? No, I saw that it was a need. I trusted my instinct. And I also trusted my friend who would never in a million years, she wasn't careless. She was very precise about things. And of, so I think that throughout the whole course of this relationship with Master Kawan, I've been back several times and I've taken groups of people there. I've realized that your destiny is your own destiny. It isn't anybody else's. You have to make those choices, significant choices, and then understand they will have an impact on other people. Mm-hmm. Because we are people, we are humans of value. It's like they say, you know, why are you not using your good china dishes and you're saving them for tomorrow? Well, today is the day that you are here. Today is the day that you're living. And, you know, I mean, you're not guaranteed that you can use your china tomorrow. I mean, if you knew that a year from now, you wouldn't be alive. Yeah. You know, maybe you would say, well, I'm going to use my china on May 10th. I'm going to use my whatever on June 15th, and I'm going to make sure I use it. Well, the circumambulation of the world and the money factor is something that it is energy. All of this is energy. These events that are, you know, that we have an opportunity to participate in, you know, they allow you to take your energy and it manifests and multiplies. So what, long story short here, to get to help heal humanity. That was my backstory. So as that progressed, I did have an opportunity to meet Serena Buffalino, who also had a similar story, but it was about Haiti. And when the earthquake took place, she made the decision that her and her at-risk students, she was a teacher in Toronto, they actually would go into the area where the earthquake had taken place in outside of Cité Soleil, and they would build a school. And she spent her decade doing that. So we come face to face and we both have stories that are similar. And we have this idea that every single little thing that we're doing together can actually multiply. And even if we don't change the entire planet, we have a responsibility and an obligation to continue this support. And even, you know, it's not the dollar amount. It's always going to be that you've changed and encouraged and helped move the negative energy into an optimistic energy.
Right.
And in that optimism, you start to feel your value. You start to feel your own integrity. You build integrity for others. And you take the optics off of, I'm not good enough. I don't make a difference. I'm still suffering. That mindfulness piece just changes you within a split second, because if you've helped one person, and I know, Yvonne, I mean, with the challenges that you've shared about your son and how the world can look at, you know, But that doesn't change who you are as a person. It gives you value. It gives you the merit. It gives you the good karmic stability to say, I'm a fighter. And you're, you know, the big piece we both have is courage. Mm-hmm. And that courage is what developed into, you know, all the naysayers looking at me and saying, oh my God, you're out of your mind. What are you going to Cambodia for? You're going to do this. You're going to do that. But when you do the action and you actually see the results, you become, you know, it's another bite into, you know, I'm wearing red today for you. I always wear black, but I'm wearing red today is a love. We're February. We're going to be Valentine's Day soon. And really you're developing the love factor. You're just mm-hmm. adding every single second that you can into the betterment. So, you know, I have deep gratitude. You know, your card behind you says, you know, live for today. And that's exactly what the, you know, the world needs to do. So I didn't see that until just now, but this is, yes. So that's a little bit of my story on Cambodia and Help Heal Humanity.
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. And it's so interesting as you're speaking, because I have reached out to Serena, and we will connect very soon.
She's amazing.
Yeah, because I definitely would like to share her story as well. I think that, you know, when I first got downloaded my mission, my reason for being here, as a massive to uplift the spirit of humanity, I mean, yeah. That sounded like a pretty darn big job. And I was, how the heck am I going to do that? And yeah. And all I got was one little clue. You need space. A space, space in my life, space for, you know, like to go into space. Like, and that was all I got. And then the channel shut down. So I had to figure out the rest. That's part mm-hmm. of the reason I do these Words, Women and Wisdom radio shows, is to showcase to women out there that if you are going through something right now that seems like, you know, there's no hope, or you've had this challenge and it's been dragging on and you're just not sure where the end is in sight, have trust, have faith that mm-hmm. all of the people I interview on my show have been through some sort of tragedy, risen through that, are out there now triumphant. That was one of my words for the day this week. Triumphant in doing amazing things. And a lot of times it's because they had a moment in time where their intuition said yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the more clear we are, and I'm going to talk about this in my summit, the more clear we are about what it is that excites us and brings us joy, that's just one place to start. When you look at the things that bring you pride, even though pride is actually a lower vibrational energy than the word joy, mm-hmm. It still provides clues on what made you feel good. And the more that you can identify what it is that lifts your heart, then hey, do more of it. And this is one of the things that lifts my heart. And I know that sharing these stories makes a difference. I had a girl reach out to me on Facebook not that long ago, and she's, oh, you're the author of Words, Women and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. You're Yvonne Silver. And I'm, yeah. Well, what I do with my mission inspired piece is, for every copy that's purchased, I donate one to a women's shelter foundation or not for profit.
That's lovely.
So she says to me, that's the book that was on my nightstand when I was in the shelter.
Oh, wow.
And it's so interesting that we're meeting like this now, and I'm getting goosebumps just talking.
I just too, yeah.
And now she was just about to publish her first book. She was putting her equals together. I mean, life had really changed around for her. And so you know, once your work is published, you never know where it's going to go. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to have a physical book. I didn't only want to do an ebook. I wanted it to be published. Yes. I wanted it to be something that I could tangibly say, yeah, this is, you know, two years of my life here.
Yeah.
Introducing 40 different words and word concepts, all designed to help women elevate their confidence. And I know you mentioned earlier about, you know, using the right words. Just want to reassure you, everybody always uses the right words in that moment. And there are some words that have more power than others. And part of the thing that I am so passionate about is helping to put the spotlight on, maybe it's one word like should, right? I mean, even I said it myself this week, I should have blah, blah, blah. So when we should on ourselves, if we switch that from should, which has that tone of obligation and heaviness to it, and I'm doing something because someone else wants me to, not because I'm choosing to could, it's got a completely different energy of lightness and possibility and options. And it's so different. I spoke about this on another show recently when I was on someone else's podcast, that words have energy, just like, money has energy. Mm. You can't eliminate that energy, but you can transmute it by bringing together a sentence that speaks to your power. And sometimes what I found, I wrote chapter 8, when no words are even required. I found that there are definitely things that we can do as women where no words are even required. We just have to let the silence do the heavy lifting. If someone surprises us and makes a comment that we are absolutely blown away by because it's so disrespectful or negative or just not supportive, really all we have to say is, excuse me? And then
actually,
we start talking and let it just hang. And usually there's like this backpedaling you can see going on. Oh, I didn't mean it like that.
I have a line for you then to add to that, which is, I use this quite often, and that is, silence is the fence around wisdom.
Silence is the fence around wisdom. Hmm.
There you go.
That sounds very Lao Tzu. And he is quoted in my book too. Thank you for that pearl of wisdom. Yes. So you mentioned that you had a story of tragedy to triumph. So, you know, we have about another 10 minutes or so left. So let's just share what that story was and what you learned along the way that is particularly relevant for people that are women that are listening that may, as I say, need an extra boost of hope right now. What was the learning for you,
Alex? There's quite a few, and I have to sort of decide right in this quick moment which one I will share. I'll use one that it's not that it's more unusual, but it's not, which would be, my mother was unfortunately assaulted when she was coming home from work. So my father passed away on my 25th birthday, which was by itself one of the greatest tragedies I could ever have thought, because I had just been named one of the first female bank managers. And it was like an incredible celebration. I had really worked hard to climb up the ivory tower. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to have a university education in the early days. It just wasn't in the cards. And so I took on 3 jobs, but the job I loved the most was working for the bank. And I saw myself as becoming a leader. And when my father passed away, my mom, really, there was more, I mean, he was only 53 and my mom was only 43. So she was fighting her battles, decided she would go back to work, and then never drove a car. She took a bus every day. And one evening, it was in March, she was off the bus, walking down the street to go into her house. And she was attacked by 3 people and basically beaten with a baseball bat. Yeah. They robbed her. Left her for dead. She was on the sidewalk. It was at 9 o'clock at night. It was very dark. There weren't a lot of people coming up and down the street. And then the neighbor finally was coming home from wherever, school, I think. And she saw her and was able to get a hold of my sister and I. And the recovery of that experience was something so unbelievable for our family. To have such a significant head injury, and I mean, again, the anger that she possessed and, you know, why am I alive? Why did this happen to me? And then the reverberation into a family, losing our dad, all of those things that we had to become super support, but also understand that she needed to have purpose. She needed to have value, and that her life, you know, we didn't understand what karma she came with. But for something like that to happen, it took her over a year to walk out her front door. after she was back in the house. She couldn't look at the sidewalk, still had blood stains in front on the cement. We used bleach, we used vinegar, we used everything we could, and it took a long, long time for them to go. And then she finally was able to resolve. The biggest part of this, which I think we worked really hard with her, was the forgiveness piece, that you can stay in the moment and you can transfer your suffering into happiness, that you can't hold on to that piece, that you have to let it go. And the minute you let it go, you replace it with an optimistic feeling, and you replace it with change, and you make those decisions, and you have to own them. There was no way we could convince her. She had to actually feel it. So one of the reasons why I think I was so determined to take the transformative mindfulness and the applied mindfulness course at the university, and I did 2 3-year programs in the same 3 years, I wanted to have a vehicle that I would be able to assist her, but also assist myself in a better understanding of the mindfulness piece of understanding the body and mind and spirit can come together.
Right.
And in that moment, I think we embraced helping her to find, and then eventually, as I said, you know, she found the ability to forgive and let go and move on. And, you know, we're very proud of her, but she certainly has her challenges, and they are challenges for us as a family as well.
Of course. So, but yeah. I think that whole forgiveness piece is definitely underestimated. I was in I'm a member of the Evolutionary Business Council, and Dr. Chandra Perrin, who's on the Wisdom Council there, is known globally for her work around Project Forgive, and was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for that work. And we did a powerful exercise. She was one of the key keynote speakers. We did a powerful exercise for forgiveness. And you could literally feel across the Zoom room. I mean, there was, I don't know how many hundreds of people there, but you could feel the lightness coming out. I had another guest that I interviewed, Annette Stanwyck, a little while ago, who teaches this a similar concept, goes to prisons, and she's having that forgiveness conversation with the inmates. Super powerful work. I also wanted to talk a little bit about Karmic Alibi, because I know that you have an invitation that we can offer to the listeners as well, as we start to close. So tell me a little bit about the Karmic Alibi, Joy and Loss.
So it's my introduction is to what I'm now going to call Tabula Rasa, which is the introduction to the karmic art experience. And what I'm going to offer people is a conversation that allows them to learn how to use their karma in a very positive way. Some people think karma is bad. What I'm trying to evolve is that it's an experience of identifying how you are making those choices and how to purify. And I've been really kind of successful over the last little while by doing a painting class, 2.5 hours of me sharing my story, but also taking people not through a way of learning how to paint, but to actually see your life as a blank canvas. And then through my teaching, and I wrote something called Inspired to be Rewired, Mastering the 5 Radical Degrees of Life, Risk, Root, Remedy, Realization, and Reality. And when I incorporate that into our conversation, I help you to evolve the moment into a place where you actually can release your attachment to your suffering or to your pain, and to transform it into what it is in the moment. And then you have a painting. We actually go through the process of painting, and that painting is a positive fulfillment of what you have experienced and a memory. So it's not for everybody. And I don't want, it is not art therapy, and it is not teaching you how to paint. It's just a joyful experience. It's a karmic experience, because as we are doing it, we are actually living our life in the moment, and we are creating karma. So I am trying to create something that's a little bit different for people. And as I said, it's not for everybody. So I like to have a conversation with people first, because not always are people, sometimes we look for the quick answer. Sometimes we look for a Band-Aid, and I do not want to take people down a rabbit hole they can't get out of,
right.
But I want to offer them something that is different and unique. So, And then we have a potential for them to be joining if they want the actual Karmic Art Experience tutorials.
Okay. So where and how can people learn about whether or not it's going to be something for them? How are you filtering that?
Right. So at this particular time, I'm going to create a landing page on my website at patriciakarengygich.com, where people can put their name in with their email address or contact information. And then I would set up a 30-minute Zoom call if they wanted to, talk about it, and then see if they qualify or they're interested in doing that. Yes.
Okay, great. So that's going to be something that is a 30-minute karma invitation to.
Yeah, I guess just an examination of, asking questions of me, like what does it involve? What would I do?
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds like a really valuable piece. Certainly, myself doing a number of different pieces of work with different masters right now on elevating consciousness and really stepping into some of the things that are surfacing now that need clearing in order for me to be taking full advantage of the opportunities that are coming my way as I'm elevating my vibrational frequency as well. So thank you for offering that. That is a gift for sure. I would also like to offer the listeners a gift as well. A couple of times recently, I've offered different things. So right now, I would suggest, if you're intrigued to learn more about the power of words, in particular, Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, obviously, we are coming up with International Women's Day coming up. It does make a beautiful gift for anyone, any woman in your life, who could really benefit by shifting up some of their language. And there is something in there for everybody, whether they're an entrepreneur or female professional, woman in business, stay-at-home mom. There's something in there for everybody. Even if you change only one word, it can have a powerful impact. And there's 40 different words and word concepts in the book. So I encourage you to hop on Amazon. You can actually find out more information about it. You can even download a free 3-chapter excerpt if you want to do that first from my website, which is wordswomenandwisdom.com. And it's spelled out A-N-D in the middle versus the ampersand, wordswomenandwisdom.com. Click on the red button on the left that says download a free 3-chapter excerpt, and you'll be invited to join the Women in Wisdom VIP community so we can keep in touch with other books that are coming out, articles that are specific for women that have a positive element and twist, events coming up, things like my virtual summit, which is confidence plus credibility equals cash. So there's a variety of ways that you can really use your language to step into a much more powerful place. And as women, I still believe that part of the reason I do the work I do is because my mom did become a stay-at-home mom. I mean, my dad got a bullet in Dunkirk. He ended up coming back with PTSD, and he literally drained the dignity right out of her. He wouldn't let her go back to work. She became a stay-at-home mom, and he wouldn't even let her drive the car. He took the car keys and wouldn't let her drive. So it was really about her power getting diminished. And as women, when we can speak up for ourselves, be really clear in our expectations of others and stand up for our beliefs, it makes a powerful difference. So thank you for joining me today, Patricia. I've really enjoyed this conversation. You're doing some amazing, powerful work, and I hope the listeners will be taking advantage of the invitations that have been offered today. So thank you, Patricia.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated you today.
I appreciate you, and thank you for all of your beautiful connections. Have a beautiful afternoon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in 4 different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.